88 to 91 FM. BBC Radio 2.
Welcome to Tom Paxton, Still Ramblin'. My guest tonight is probably better known in country music circles and certainly in his native America. Hal Ketchum is a truly wonderful singer and songwriter.
We're going 90 miles an hour down a dead end road. What's your hurry, son? Where you gonna go? We're gonna holler at the moon, shoot out the light. It's a small town Saturday night. It's a small town Saturday night.
Originally from New York State, I caught up with Hal in Chicago, where he lives now with his wife in their luxury apartment. Totally acoustic, this is a unique way to enjoy the music of Hal Ketchum.
Maybe I pray too much. Maybe I'm wasting God's time. But living without your touch is driving me out of my mind. And if you could only see how much you matter to me, maybe you would stay forever. Maybe I care too much. Maybe I push you away. Maybe I'd have my doubts if I were in your place. But if you could see inside this aching heart of mine, and maybe you would stay forever. You don't have to go on living with your back against the wall. Let my loving arms surround you, baby. I won't let you fall. Oh, no. If you would trust in me and this love of mine, and we'd sail an endless sea under a starry, starry sky. And when the cold wind blows, we'll hold each other close, and maybe you will stay forever.
I got a chance to see something while you sang that song that you didn't see, which is your wife, Gina, just totally into that song. I must say that when someone who hears us all the time is still into the song, we're doing something right, which you are doing.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for that. We're here sitting here in your living room, 19 floors above the Chicago River with a view of Lake Michigan. looking down toward Grant Park. A lot of familiar territory to me. I grew up my first 10 years in this city. But you didn't. You were a farm boy from upstate New York.
Yes.
How long did you live there before you made your first move?
Well, I lived in the same house until I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Then immediately just sprung out.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get out and look around. So,
where did you go?
Initially, I moved to Florida. I lived in Florida, on the west coast of Florida, on a small island for a couple years, and then went back to New York very briefly, and then moved to Texas. I moved to Texas in 1979, outside of Austin, Texas. And again, I, by that time, I was really... I'm a cabinet maker by trade. I had developed, I'd apprenticed under two brothers in Manchester, Vermont, and had a skill that could, with a box of tools, I could travel around and find my way.
You and Harrison Ford.
So I started doing that, and was working a lot as a cabinet maker and kind of following that trade around, but also had started playing and writing a lot of songs.
That's what I was going to ask. When did that begin? After
that really began. Well, I wrote poetry really since childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I found it a great way to get attention. So I wrote a lot of poetry as a kid. You know, odes to my mother or my father or my uncle or whoever, or my great grandfather. You know, so I wrote a lot of lyric, if you will. But started really writing songs when I got down to Austin, Texas. That's a hotbed, and certainly. I caught it on sort of a second wave. The singer-songwriter is really revered in that part of the world.
I hear a lot of Texas in your writing. For me, Texas music, when I think about it, is like its own genre. It's not what I think of as country when I think of, you know, Nashville establishment country.
No.
It's not folk music.
No.
You know, it's not Peter, Paul, and Mary.
No.
How would you describe the difference between that music and Nashville?
I think that Nashville is the marketplace. My reason for migrating to Nashville was to be a songwriter, to get a publishing deal and to write songs. That was my main goal. I subsequently got a record deal and had hit records. But I had started writing. I made a record in Fredericksburg, Texas. I produced it with a friend of mine named Brian Wood, who had been playing guitar with Nancy Griffith at that time. And Brian and I went in with 12 songs that I'd written, really the first 12 songs I ever wrote, and we recorded them. And that tape started circulating and got in the hands of a guy named Dick Whitehouse at Curb Records. And I got my record deal, if you will.
And that came out of the blue, really, that record deal.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, I want to be Harlan Howard. I still do. I want to write songs. I want to be one of those Nashville cats. I mean, that's really my goal in life.
Were there any of those... first 12 songs on that album that went on to be hits for you?
No, but there's a song that I think I put on a hits record called Someplace Far Away, which is one of the...
And that 12. Was one of the 12?
Yes.
Would you do a little of that for us?
Sure, absolutely.
Or all of it?
Yeah, absolutely, if I can remember all of it. I haven't played it in years, but I'll take a swing at it. I'd be honored.
The man knows no fear.
Not even, man. What's to be afraid of? It's only music. Daddy brought home a photograph from the paper yesterday. It showed a line of wagons moving someplace far away. Well, that picture made my daddy smile, it made my mama cry. Seems like daddy's wagon load of dreams long since passed her by. But the dream that makes a sparrow fly will make an eagle fall. And while it makes a rich man money, it ain't no dream at all. It's a crying shame to wake up just to find it's all been broken too. Careful what you're dreaming, 'cause it someday may come true.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful song. And that's one of the earliest, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the first things I ever wrote as a song again.
So then you came to Nashville.
Right.
And simultaneously started writing and publishing and got a recording deal.
Mm-hmm.
that produced the first album for Curb was...
it was called Past the Point of Rescue.
Past the Point of Rescue, which we're also going to ask you to sing.
Oh, by all means.
Oh, man, that's such a song.
That's an Irish song.
Yeah. You don't know, but I do.
Yeah. Mick Hanley.
Mick Hanley, yes, indeed. Once you were in Nashville, once you were doing it, I'm going to jump ahead a tiny bit. You were inducted into the Grand Ole Opry.
Yes.
What an honor. How did that happen? What's that like?
It's amazing to me. I thought, here's an opportunity, while the iron's really hot, here's an opportunity to leave a real musical footnote. And also, selfishly, it was a gesture to appease my father. My father was dying. My father had lung cancer and had really just days to live. And he was in a remarkable, avid fan of country music. The reason that I had any sense about who these people were, who George Jones was, who Buck Owens was, who Marty Robbins was, who Ray Charles was, who any of these human beings were, was because of my father and his record collection. So I thought, this would be a wonderful thing for my father and I to share, and we were able to do that. And I've got a black cowboy hat up here that was the hat my father wore the night I was inducted into the Opry, and he was stage right in a wheelchair, and he hung on after I went out and lobbied for it. Literally went out to the Opry, and I'd performed on the Opry a few times prior to that, and said, "Look, I would really love to be a member of this remarkable society here," and they said, "Okay, we'll do the induction." And that was about 3 months after I'd gone out, and they said yes. Okay, so my dad literally hung on for 3 months. We flew him in. He was there for the Opry induction and died 2 days later. I went back to New York with him, and that was it. I said goodbye. So that was sort of a double-edged endeavor for me.
Of course.
Very important. And I also have such a reverence for the Opry. I mean, that's really, it is the mother church.
Well, now, you know, when I think of the Grand Ole Opry and country music as it's in the public mind defined by the Grand Ole Opry, the public image of the Grand Ole Opry is people in spangled suits.
Yes.
And great big huge hats.
Yeah.
And you don't do any of that.
Fellini wouldn't even believe it out there, backstage at the Opry.
Yeah.
Fellini'd shake his head.
Tell us.
It's really amazing scene. It's a brilliant scene. And you see Porter Wagoner walking by, and I don't know how Porter holds the suit up, you know. He's got 90 pounds of nudie suit on, you know, and huge rhinestones, wagon wheel on the back. I mean, that's part of an era of country music. It's offset with bluegrass bands who wear black blazers and don't get all dolled up. People like myself who go out there with the shirt untucked, you know. I mean, it's a broad group of people, but it's an amazing scene, and it's always a scene because you don't know when you're going on, and you don't until they holler for you, and you run from 25 or 30 yards away from these dressing rooms out onto the stage just as you're being introduced. You never know. So the beauty of that is, no matter how many times you perform in front of people, the butterfly factor is really high because there's no preparation. There's nowhere to stand and get ready. I mean, you're on.
This is Tom Paxton, still rambling on BBC Radio 2, 88 to 91 FM, with my guest tonight, Hal Ketchum. Yeah. Give us a little bit of the Irish song.
Oh, okay, sure. Last night I dreamed you were back again, larger than life again, and holding me tight again, placing those same kisses on my brow, sweeter than ever now. Lord, I remember how I couldn't get enough of kissing. Do you know how much you're missing? No, you don't, but I do. Days like a slow train trickle by, even the words that I write refuse to fly. All I can hear is your song haunting me, melody out of my head, you see. Distractions I've been using. Do you know how much you're losing? No, you don't, but I do. But I do. And I wonder if I'm past the point of rescue. There's no word from you at all. The best that you can do. Well, I never meant to push or shove you. Do you know how much I love you? No, you don't. I swore I'd never fall like this again. Fools like me never win. I came to my knees again. Can't close the door on the likelihood that now things might be just as good. I always believed they would. Gotta let your love invite me. Baby, do you think it might be? No, you don't, but I do. But I do. And I wonder if I'm past the point of rescue. Is no word from you at all the best that you can do? Well, I never meant to push or shove you. Do you know how much I love you? No, you don't. But I do. But I do. And I wonder if I'm past the point of rescue. Is no word from you at all the best that you can do? Well, I never meant to push or shove you. Do you know how much I love you? No, you don't, but I do. I know you don't, baby, but I do. No, 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 you don't, but I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do, baby, I still do. Well, I do. Baby, yes I do. Baby, yes I do. Baby, I still do.
Boy, I love that song. I love the way you do that song.
Well, I should apologize to Mick right now. I'm missing a couple chords, you know. Mick Hanley, if you're listening, you know the drill.
How is your performing life now different from when you began?
I think it's basically the same. My core experience on stage has always been letting the ham out. I mean, I really am what we call in vaudeville terms a ham. I love the attention. I love being on stage. I used to put on shows in my backyard. I charged a nickel at the gate,
mm-hmm.
promoted them myself in
how'd
front
you,
of my mother's in front of my mother's sheets. I mean, and I'd do 30 or 40
yes.
cents a show.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly. So I've always had that need in me. And when I go there, I'm fine. There was a period of sheer terror when I really started getting famous. You know, fame's a bewildering experience. It's something that, in my case, I clamored for and I needed all my life. And then when it started to really come to me, when I started having hit records and playing these huge shows in front of all these people, suddenly I'm on the bill with George Jones. Now, so I've been banging on this big door for years. Suddenly the door opens. And I walk into this room, and I'm in this room with Waylon Jennings and Willie and Ray Charles. I mean, people that have been my heroes for years. And I had to really sort of readjust my thinking.
And you feel like maybe you should be going to get the Cokes.
Oh, by all means, absolutely, yeah. I should absolutely be going to get
feeling,
the Cokes,
yeah.
By all means, yeah. So there was a certain amount of wrestling that goes with that. But the stage performance, I've always seemed to have the ability, and this is not brag, I've had the ability to hold people's attention once I got it. And I think that's perhaps the key to good performance. Getting people's attention is really not that difficult.
They want to.
Holding people's attention is a whole nother craft. And I think that I've really learned how to do that comfortably now, how to do that in my own skin, how to realize that I can, that ironically being myself is all that people ever ask. I remember I opened a show for John Prine. A turning point for me one night was opening a show for John Prine way early on. I was in a theater. There were 1,500 people there that came to see John Prine. They didn't give a rat's ass about who was up there first. Mm-hmm. And that was just the way it was. And I went out there and I played three or four of my songs that nobody had ever heard. And I had about half the crowd with me. And well, one guy in the second row was just being loud and saying, "Where's Prine?" and starting this, trying to get this chant going. And I put on a harmonica holder. And he said, "Oh, good, you're going to play some Bob Dylan." And I said, "No, sir, I think I didn't come out here to play Bob Dylan songs. I'm going to play Hal Ketchum songs." And the place went crazy and got behind me and suddenly put this guy in his place and put me in my place. And it was that honest moment that broke the tension and allowed me to do the next four or five songs and get an encore, have Prine go on back out there and play another one, son. You know, I think it's a matter of learning from those moments.
Some of those moments can be killers, though.
Oh,
I mean,
my.
I know that experience of opening for an artist who is not merely an artist of stature, but an artist with a fanatical following.
Oh, by all means.
You know, which certainly would describe Prine's crowd or Dylan's crowd.
Right.
Whenever I have to, whenever it happens that I follow someone who has just been terrific, you know, an absolutely great performance. You and I know, of course, that there's nothing easier than following a great act.
Absolutely.
If, and I mean, everyone's happy, they're in a good mood.
That's right, they're
prime. All you need is let people take a breath.
Yes.
And then they're more than ready. But there's this conception that, well, difficult act to follow. Whenever I'm following an act that's just been wonderful, I allude to that. I say, well, you know, very difficult to follow X. On the other hand, ever since the day I followed Black Sabbath, I have not known the meaning of fear. And I did. I followed Black Sabbath in a quarry in the middle of Germany once. I don't know how it came to be, but I live to tell the story.
The golden moment with Don Paxton, yeah. Wow.
One of those moments where you wonder, what am I doing here?
Yeah. Sometimes it can be the longest hour of your life. But there's always a moment in there. There's always a shimmer. There's always
even you learn through experience.
Oh yeah,
how to get the best out of it you possibly can.
Absolutely.
May I sing one for you?
I was going to ask you to.
Yeah, this is a fresh off the press. It has a little, I don't know if you'd call it a chorus, but a little refrain that I'll ask you to learn instantly, and it won't take you long. I closed the door on Father's house while I was still a boy. Sailed with Agamemnon to besiege the walls of Troy. Come away with me, where the long grass grows. Come away with me, where Missouri flows. Come away with me, where the long grass grows. Come away with me, where Missouri flows. I dreamed of baby Moses adrift upon the Nile, till Pharaoh's daughter found him, saying, "Stay with me a while." Come away with me, where the long grass grows. Come away with me, where Missouri flows. I came down Shenandoah with the wood smoke in the trees. I caught the scent of balsam and it brought me to my knees. I sailed beneath Orion where the long ships dared to go. Lit my fire of mesquite wood by the creeks of the Navajo. Come away with me, where the long grass grows. Come away with me, where Missouri flows. Now God himself is walking out across these sweeping plains. He brings the racing fire and he brings the soothing rains. Come away with me where the long grass groans. Come away with me where Missouri flows. Oh, I closed the door on Father's house while I was still a boy. I sailed with Agamemnon to besiege the walls of Troy. Come away with me where the long grass groans. Come away with me where Missouri flows. Come away with me where the long grass groans. Come away with me where Missouri flows. Thanks, Alice.
Nice work, man.
My wonderful guest has been Hal Ketchum. Hal, thank you so much for being with me.
God bless you, brother. Good to see you, Tom.
Back at you. A great pleasure to hear the music of Hal Ketchum. Thanks to him and producer Donald McInnes and Colin Stephen for the sound. Next week, my guest is a simply amazing Janice Ian.
We all play the game when we dare to cheat ourselves. It's solitaire, inventing lovers on the phone, repenting of the lives unknown. They call and say, come dance with me. Murmur vague obscenities, but ugly girls like me.
Till then, for me, Tom Paxton, it's goodbye.